Welcome to Today on Broadway for Tuesday, March 19th, 2024. I'm Broadway Radio's Matt Tamanini.
And I'm Tell Me on a Sunday podcast, Grace Hockey.
Grace, we are recording far later than normal because we stayed up late, or at least I stayed up late. I'm not sure what time you normally go to bed, but we wanted to make sure that we got the reviews for An Enemy of the People. That one opened up over at the Circle in the Square Theater, so we're going to dive into those here just momentarily. But, of course, if you want to hear all of our coverage throughout all of this spring season, head over to patreon.com/BroadwayRadio, broadwayradio.com/Patreon. All right, An Enemy of the People, of course, is the Henrik Ibsen classic. This new Broadway revival features an adaptation by Amy Herzog, who did another Ibsen classic, A Doll's House, last year on Broadway. The show is directed by Sam Gold, who just so happens to be Amy Herzog's husband, and it features an incredible cast led by Jeremy Strong as Dr. Thomas Stockman and Michael Imperioli as his brother Peter Stockman. Also in the cast making her Broadway debut is Victoria Pedretti playing Jeremy Strong's character's daughter. There are some great, like, New York City strong, sturdy stage character actors in this show, Grace. Caleb Eberhart, David Patrick Kelly, Thomas J. Ryan, just some really fantastic actors in this show. And it opened up over the Circle in the Square Theater on Monday night. It is currently scheduled to run through June 16th. And as of recording time, review aggregator site Did They Like It has collected 14 reviews. 11 were positive, 3 were mixed, and none were negative. If you're unfamiliar with the show, the plot description reads thusly, quote, "A small-town doctor considers himself a proud, upstanding member of his close-knit community. When he discovers a catastrophe that risks the lives of everyone in town, he raises the alarm. But he is shaken to his core when those in power, including his own brother, not only try to silence him, they try to destroy him." So if you're unfamiliar, this has to do with a small town that opens up a new luxury spa, and Jeremy Strong's character discovers that the spring that it is using for the spa is contaminated, and he tries to warn people of that. As I said, the reviews are very good, Grace. Let's start off with Jesse Green from the New York Times, who did make the show a critic's pick. He was at the preview last week where there were protesters, so he opens his review kind of talking about that a little bit, but I'll pick a little nuggets before I get into the heart of it. He says that the show is, quote, "a bitter satire of local politics that soon reveals itself as a slow-boil tragedy of human complacency. How the satire becomes the tragedy is central to the power of Ibsen's dramatic construction, overriding its occasional plot contrivances." He goes on to talk a little bit more about the plot, but as he goes out, he says that the character of Peter is, quote, "brought to hilariously despicable life by Michael Imperioli." He goes on to talk about some of that complacency, how even the most well-meaning characters let bad things happen because they don't take any action. And he goes on to say, quote, "It's too weak to say that this conspiracy of inaction makes An Enemy of the People relevant. Its issues and ours are not similar, but identical. And not just its issues. Its characters, too, are contemporary. Doppelgangers for our own vicious demagogues, cowed editors, greasy both-sidesists, and defanged idealists. More than once, I thought Strong must have modeled his spectacularly accurate yet non-showy performance on Dr. Anthony Fauci, the embattled former infectious disease expert, including not just his messianic faith in science, but also his barely mastered disdain, social weirdness, and haircut." Sarah Holdren, writing for Vulture, was also positive, saying, quote, "but Herzog and Gold have cleared away any fustiness, which really lies not in Ibsen, but in us, and have drawn out Enemy's inherent muscularity." Adam Feldman of Time Out in New York gave the show 4 out of 5 stars, saying, quote, "I've seen productions that laid out the counter-arguments and personality conflicts more compellingly, but none that focused so intently and mournfully on the underlying issue of contamination, both of the environment and of public discourse. This version of the play is a plea to the audience." Matt Winman of AM New York was one of the mixed reviews. And speaking of the New York Times review from Jesse Green, where he talked about being at the performance where the protest was, Winman said, quote, "I wish I had been there. Alas, I attended the following night, as it would have been an exciting addition to this uneven production of a timely work." Robert Hoffler of The Rap, who was mixed, at least had some strong things to say, and in another Dr. Fauci reference, saying, quote, "Most of all is Jeremy Strong's Dr. Thomas Stockmann, who vividly recalls Dr. Anthony Fauci, especially when this good Norwegian doctor is warning a town about the dangers of an impending epidemic. The only problem with making Enemy a blow-by-blow retelling of Trump and Fauci's battles is that what we all endured in real life a few years ago was so much more dramatic than what's being offered on stage under the direction of Sam Gold." Now, Grace, you saw the show. You are an admitted lover of Michael Imperioli and Jeremy Strong to boot. What were your thoughts on this production?
I knew that it was going to be polarizing in the sense of tons of people loving it, tons of people probably hating it. The consensus that I gathered from anyone that I've talked to were both of those things. I never felt like a mid from anyone. It was interesting to see the audience reactions and the because I feel like, you know, the way that audiences, the way that we've always interpreted art is that we make it about ourselves, right? And I think that everyone saw their lives replaying something that was particularly traumatic exactly 4 years ago right now, like this very week. So I think it was particularly helpful for people to have something that's like tale as old as time, but also digestible in a way that Amy Herzog has made it. Like, I genuinely believe there is not another person currently that I can name that does a better job at making Ibsen's work so easy. And just like the translations are just so good. I'm obviously a fan of hers in general, and then getting to like work on and see Doll's House, and then the way this one's gone, I can't wait to see her show at MTC. Like, it's just really exciting. And I think from like a writing perspective, so many people have kind of glossed over that in a way that I just hope, and I'm glad that you read that in some of the reviews, that people are making note of it because it's great. And I hope that this is more collaborations from her and Sam to come. I think that it's so cool that they did this one and that they chose to do this as their first. But I have to say, like, I loved Michael Imperioli in this. And it's not just because I love him. I just think he was excellent. And he was really well cast. I also think David Patrick Kelly slays. But yeah, so it's like a strong group. And visually, it's nice. And I have to say, I'm going to shout it out again. The Linier Bard that descends. This is not, it's not really a spoiler at this point. Like, people have like posted videos. But it's an event. Like, it really is an event, especially for a short Ibsen play. It makes it feel like it's worth your time, attention, and beverage intake as well.
Yeah, some of the reviews actually mentioned that as well. So not a spoiler by any means. All right, Grace, the Palace Theater has been dark since the closing of SpongeBob SquarePants, the musical, or the SpongeBob musical, or whatever they were calling it. But not for much longer, because the Palace Theater is set to reopen on May 28th with a 3-week 18 performance residency from Tony, Grammy, and Emmy Award winner Ben Platt in celebration of his upcoming third album, Honey Mind. The residency will be directed by Michael Arden, who of course directed Platt in the most recent Broadway revival of Parade, for which I think Ben was honestly robbed of a well-deserved second Tony Award. The concert will feature songs from the new album as well as things from his previous two albums. I would be shocked if there wasn't a show tune thrown in there as well. We have been hinting at a show coming to the Palace Theater fairly soon, Grace. I've been talking about that basically every chance I can to throw that in as something to look forward to in the 2024-2025 season. Obviously, this is getting kind of people ready to get back into the Palace before there is a real actual show. But I love that. Like, I love this. I love the fact that, as we've been talking about, whether it's the Alan Cumming thing or the Christian Chenoweth thing, like, having these events in Broadway houses is special. And he's insanely talented. And to have him do something like this on Broadway is very cool and very exciting. I've not listened to a single song from any of his solo albums just because I don't listen to modern solo albums. But I have a feeling this is going to be a very, very cool 18 performances over at the Palace Theater, Grace.
Listen, he had a really successful tour. It totally makes sense. I think the timing's kind of crazy to be like, I'm getting in there maybe before some other shows, but it's certainly exciting. And I, I'm curious if the parade crowd will return or if it'll be the girlies that went to see him on tour or that are still now of age where they have college money from Dear Evan Hansen.
Yeah. I mean, think about all of the people who have played the Palace Theater and done solo concert shows there. Judy Garland, Elvis Presley, Bette Midler, Liza, of course, Liza at the Palace, Diana Ross. Like, it's just like that's a huge honor. And like to reopen the Palace Theater with a solo residency, I mean, that's a big deal. That is a piece of Broadway history. Not that he hasn't made some of that already, but it's exciting. It is certainly an exciting announcement. All right, Grace, let's dive into some other exciting announcements. How much excitement your mileage may vary, I suppose. But it looks like the folks over at Titanic are just opening up a direct path or portal from Oz to the Ship of Dreams, because we are having yet another Elphaba step into the role of, here, do you want to say the name so I don't screw up? Can you give me the accent?
Celine Dion.
Yes, a third straight Elphaba is going to be playing Celine Dion. Di Rossioli is going to take over the role on April 30th, succeeding former Elphaba Nicole Parker, who succeeded former Elphaba Jackie Burns, who actually replaced Nicole Parker as well. But she's going to end her run on March 31st. Di, who I believe at one point had played Elphaba more than anybody else, both on Broadway and on the road. I don't know if that's still the case, but she had at one point. She's going to be taking over the role, and I think she's going to be absolutely fantastic. So another reason to head back to the Darryl Roth Theater to check that one out. Speaking of shows that I may or may not have seen multiple times, yesterday they announced the new set of queens that'll be taking over the roles in six on the Boleyn tour starting on April 16th. Some of them, many of them actually, are names that are familiar to people that have been following the queendom. Former Broadway alternate Christina Leopold will be taking over as Catherine Aragon. Danielle Mendoza will be playing Anna of Cleves, and Alize Cruz will be Kate Howard. The current Universal Six alternate, who I have seen on both Broadway and on the road, I think always playing Kate Howard, Cassie Silva, she is now going to be playing Anne Boleyn full-time, as well as another current alternate, Kelly Denise Taylor. She is going to be playing Jane Seymour full-time. And then there's a host of other alternates coming in as well. So, Grace, we've talked about how like they've been doing these, you know, to borrow a term from hockey, line changes of queens on tour and on Broadway. And I think the fact that, yes, they are bringing in a bunch of new queens, I think it's great that they are also promoting from within as well for people who have been with the show in different capacities for a long, long time.
I agree. People are collecting these gals like Infinity Stones. Like, they're, you know, anytime they see, Pokemon. I'm serious. They are. Like, anytime, you know, you see, and you, I know you see the tour as often as you can, whenever you're able to see some of the queens like transfer to Broadway or go abroad or, you know, do a different tour. It's exciting. And I'm glad that I hope it is also because these actors are having a great time doing the show. Totally. Because that's so awesome. I think that anytime you are in a role that like, you feel like, I feel so good to do this show however many times, especially with it being like a 90-minute no intermission show, it's high energy and you never stop, but I think it's awesome. So I think that the more, I love the six queen fandom, and I love the lore of, oh, you got to see this Howard. Oh, I love seeing this person as Anne Boleyn. Like, I just think that that's so fun. And I think that they have developed a really strong, loyal, committed, loving fan base in a way that a lot of shows don't get the opportunity to do, whether that's, you know, because of, you know, accessibility or, you know, for whatever reason, it just doesn't always work.
Doesn't run long enough.
Yeah. But this one has gotten to do it. And I think it's great. And I love seeing every time that they crank something out, it gets more and more exciting.
Speaking of exciting, two Broadway shows that have not yet begun performances will be featured on late night talk shows this week. The first one is going to be happening very soon after we finish recording here, Grace. And that is the fact that Huey Lewis himself, as well as Mackenzie Kurtz, are going to be on Jimmy Kimmel on Monday night/Tuesday morning.
Can I give you backstory on this?
Please do.
Okay, so Jimmy Kimmel and Huey Lewis are best friends. They
Oh,
have been
really?
friends. Yeah, they're really close. They've been friends for a super long time. If you go back and watch on YouTube, like he's been on his show many, many times. Kimmel, obviously like got to see the show in San Diego, talked to him about it when it was there, and so has been a part of it. And so I knew that the first late night show that they would have would definitely be Huey's Bestie. I mean, they spent the pandemic together, and Jimmy
Oh.
has been a part of his journey with like hearing loss and talking about, you know, helping to find a cure for Meniere's. Like, there's so much, and he's so great, and he's so supportive of not only Huey and the show, but of like whatever the next wave of it is. And so the fact that Mackenzie's going to be on and singing the very special rendition of Hammer with the arrangement by Brian Usefer, who is God's gift to music. Like, I'm not even like not even subtly plugging this. Like, I love Usefer, and I think that what he does with arrangements, he did, you know, Beautiful Noise. He's been on so many shows, but I think he's done with this song. It's almost unrecognizable to the original Hammer, which I think is why it's also so cool and powerful in the show. So yeah, I'm really excited that this is the first one that they're doing, because I've been thinking about it for over a year, how the first time they do something, it's got to be on Kimmel, and I don't know what it's gonna be, but it's got to be on Kimmel. So I'm excited to watch this as soon as we're done recording.
Amazing. The other one is another show that you probably know a decent amount about. And that is because, and of course, it had to happen with a show in New York City because Alicia Keys and Malia Joy Moon are set to appear on Friday night's episode of The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon over at 30 Rock. So that will be available on NBC whenever they're on 11:35, probably later in the show, or the next day on Peacock. All right, let's get into a couple feel-good recommendations here. First, last week we brought you kind of like a music video from The Outsiders. Now we have a video kind of from a recording session with Sky Dakota Lynch singing the song Stay Gold. And then, Grace, you mentioned this actually on yesterday's episode. It brought about a text message from your mother, and this is the CBS Sunday Morning segment on The Notebook. So you see Ingrid Michaelson and Becca Brunstetter talking about it, as well as Michael Greif and Shelley Williams, and there's some footage and all of that stuff. So if you want to check out the segment that got Margaret to text Grace, this will be the one. It'll be in the show notes. All right, everybody, that's all that we have for today. Thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Broadway Radio, and you can follow me on Instagram at BWWMatt. Grace, where can people find you?
You can find me at It's Grace Hockey.
All right, everybody, have a wonderful Tuesday, and we'll be back to talk to you tomorrow.